Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more. We all love the inbound lead as sales leaders, as sales reps. We love it. The hand raisers, the demo requesters, the tell me mores, they're the dream. But what if you could turn your outbound prospects into inbound leads? My guest is going to tell us how. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks. And today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about how to create inbound leads using outbound sales messaging. He's a growth marketer that's worked with over 120 startups in his career. He teaches founders the processes and systems that they need in place in order to automate the mundane and leave time for high leverage revenue activities. He's currently working with startups to increase their growth rate above the demanding 20% month over month growth rate that VCs benchmark on so they can raise their next round. He's passionate about outbound sales and marketing and teaches founders the strategies that make outbound a dependable pipeline of growth. And his favorite way to do this, we're going to talk about today, it's to use outbound motions to turn them into inbound sales. Eric Noslowski, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Thank you, Sarah. That was an awesome introduction. I'm really happy to be here.
Really excited to have you. So let's just dive right into this topic, because obviously this is going to be something people are like, oh my God, tell me how to do it. I want to do it. I want to do it so bad. So how do you take inbound and turn it into, or sorry, how do you take outbound, turn it into inbound?
Yeah, absolutely. So this was something that I started thinking about as I started getting into like all of the sales tech, right? Like you now the sales technology is at a point where if you wanted to send 50,000 cold emails in a month, you could do it. And like, you could just send out a ton of messages and you could kind of get good reply rates. But I was like, you know, I was working with all of these startups and I found that not all of them have an offer that's made for cold email. Like if you have an offer that can communicate extremely well over written form, like there's one offer that I'm working with right now, and it's literally focused on female founders. And would you like to get in touch with business to government contracts? So basically these big government deals, are you interested? And that is crushing it on just an outbound motion right now, because it's something that is pretty unique. People don't know how to do it themselves. And oh, there's a guarantee in the email as well. And so then that outbound motion is just crushing it. But then when you come to these other startups, where perhaps you take like a B2B fintech startup, or I was actually just speaking to somebody who they do procurement management. That's a really tough cold email to get across, because you know, if you set this procurement management provider, they actually in their pilot, they saved the company. Literally, they were spending $10 million. They literally saved them $4 million. And that is actually so good that when you put it in an outbound motion, nobody's going to believe it. And it's just, the whole thing just isn't set up for outbound. So I started thinking, I was like, well, how can we use outbound motions to get people into something or to qualify them into something that then they could turn into an inbound lead? And then also, I just want for the audience to know, like, I know, I don't want anybody to say like, oh, well, this isn't totally inbound. Yes, I know that. So of course, the perfect inbound lead is somebody's coming in because they read your blog, they saw your resources, and then they sign up for a demo. Perfect inbound lead. But there's other places to get these kind of, I'm going to call them quote unquote inbound leads as well. And you know, these are some of the strategies we're going to talk about. I have a top three that I usually go with, and I call one Trojan horses, two building communities, and then the third one is the challenges. And these are usually the buckets that they fit into, but I sit down with every single client individually and come up with exactly what that outbound motion is going to be.
Very cool. I'm so excited. Let's just dive right into how to actually do this tactically. Start us off with our Trojan horses and we'll go from there.
Yeah. And I wanted to start with the Trojan horses because it might take the most amount of time. And this one, if you crush this one, you're going to knock it out of the park. Like you're going to really get a lot of inbound leads going because it's the most useful one, but it's the hardest one to do by far. And so what I mean by a Trojan horse is, you build something, we usually build something like a no-code utility, a checklist, or calculators, and then the list can kind of go on. But we usually use no-code to outbound to people and say, you know, hey, I saw you're in this industry. Would this be interesting to you? And I'll give an example, but I'm going to give an example first of what that isn't, right? So one time they wanted me to run this campaign. I was like, guys, this isn't going to work. And they said, no, just try it anyway. And there was a ag tech startup that I was starting with, that I was working with. And what they wanted to do was they were like, well, you know, it's kind of like a finance ag tech product. And they're like, well, if we could reach out to accountants and see if the accountants know anybody who would be interested in our product, that would be really useful. And so they said, we should ask accountants if any of them are working with any corn farmers, because corn was like the best, the top, you know, one that could use our product. And I said, you know, if you ask that question, a lot of them are going to think that you're asking about doing their taxes. And then when you like flip it to like, hey, I actually want you to look at a product, nobody's really going to respond. Mm-hmm. So when you're, and that is exactly what turned out. So when you're building these Trojan horses, you want to make sure that you're not doing some kind of bait and switch where you're like getting people into one thing. And like, you want to make it linear and like, they kind of know what they're getting into the entire time, because anytime there's a bait and switch, these buyers, like we're living in a buyer centric world where really ideally they just want to go on Amazon and just buy something without talking to anybody. And we want to get as close to that as possible. So my favorite example right now is I'm working actually with a real estate investment fund where what they're doing is they're syndicating rounds. And what they're looking for is they're looking for people to invest into their real estate deals. And so they came to me and they said, you know, we really want to get a cold email campaign started. And I was like, you know, I'm really not sure if you want to do cold email. And they're like, well, why not? I'm like, well, you're asking people for money and you're asking sophisticated people for money that I don't think it's going to land too well. And they said, well, what would you do? And so we started working together. And I know the real estate industry, these individual investors, they love their spreadsheets. And I used to do a little bit of real estate investing. And I know they sell the spreadsheets. They sell them for like $200. It's like they keep them guarded. Some people won't even share them. These underwriting spreadsheets are so valuable. So then I told them, I'm like, look, this is what the cold email could probably look like. We could build in Airtable a quantitative sheet that everybody's using. Whatever you guys use, let's just throw it in there. But mm-hmm. I'm sure that there's qualitative things that you would want to know about a deal that currently nobody's putting into their spreadsheets. And they're like, all right, what are you saying? I'm like, all right, well, if there's a Whole Foods 2 miles from the apartment complex, does that raise the value? And they said, well, yeah, absolutely. I'm like, all right, now if there's 18 Starbucks within 2 miles versus one, does that also help the deal? Yeah, okay. How close is it to the beach? How close is it to the airport? And they said, yes, mm-hmm. all of those things help in the deal. So I said, okay, perfect. Let's put together a no-code tool where we'll have the quantitative side. And then on the qualitative side, we'll go out and we'll pull in data from mostly from Google. It's actually a really easy Google Maps scraping exercise to pull into Airtable. And so then they were like, oh my God, like this is, are we going to sell this? And like, well, you could, but for our outbound motion, no, we're not going to sell it. So then instead of the email saying, hey, we've got this really great apartment complex, it's really awesome, you should invest $1 million, which now you're coming in from like a status level of, you know, from a cold email, that just looks like you have no money and you're just begging for money. And it just doesn't look good. But now instead, the whole outbound motion is looking like, hey, you know, these times are really tough right now. I'm not sure about you, but the market's really crazy. I found your name in the real estate. They have some kind of directory. I forget what they call it. The real estate investors database. I found your name in there. I just wanted to know, could you give your opinion on our underwriting tool? Are we missing anything that you might know? And then all these real estate agents are like, or investors, they are all like these fiends for these underwriting tools. And then mm-hmm. we're getting a crazy click through right now. I could look it up, but we're getting something like a 40% click through on the Airtable link. And then responses back of people being like, oh, that was actually the best underwriting tool I've ever made, which now raises the real estate investor who's running this syndication. It raises their status. And they're saying, you know, this is a great tool. Thank you so much. Can I have a copy of it? Sure. Hey, by the way, we also syndicate deals. Would you be interested? And then boom, we're flipping them into that. And so that is one of my favorite ways right now is building these little simple things to then just get, just to show somebody that you're serious and you know exactly what you're talking about. And then you can flip them into wherever you're going. So that's my favorite kind of Trojan horse.
Yeah, that's super cool. You're definitely building that trust. Like you gave those examples, if you were coming in and just making an ask right off the bat, especially if it's something complex, or if you're giving these sort of like outlandish stats, even if they're true, but they seem outlandish, they seem fake, the like ROI numbers or the save you X amount of money, all that kind of stuff. It's just tough to, it doesn't translate over email, like you say, and it erodes trust. People are like, I don't know, that sounds like BS to me. I'm not really interested in having this conversation, but you're doing the opposite and you're building that trust. You're giving value, and it is true value. I think that's the most important part. Like you said, there's no bait and switch here. You actually did create something that's super valuable and super helpful to that person in their job, even if they choose not to engage with you.
Yeah.
Which exactly. is, I think, the most important part there.
Yeah. And so then what I do too is like for all of these venture startups, I was speaking to this isn't even a startup. I was speaking to an $11 billion company. I won't put the company out there. I was speaking to their SDR leader. And she had no clue what email warm-up was. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. That's like, oh, wow. Like I totally didn't see that coming. And so then that sparked for me too. I was like, all right, now I'm currently putting together a Notion template, which then I'll be happy to hand it out because it's not going to be that difficult to put together, of just a checklist of after everything's been automated, all your cold emails are automated, your video prospecting is kind of pinging back and forth, you've got some Slack messages going, after all of that's automated, what are the high leverage things that you should be doing every day? Because I was trying to get that SDR leader to that point. I said, while all this stuff is automated, you should really be focusing, like we were just talking about, on who's viewing the LinkedIn profile, getting them into another kind of sequence that all has to be done manually. And he said, wait, all of our emails aren't automated. I said, oh, okay. So then we get into that motion too, right? So then that would be an example of a checklist, right? Is like putting together a checklist that is making people think, wait a minute, in order to be using this checklist, I need to be automating this part, or something has to happen before this. Mm-hmm. Wait, how did you automate this thing before this? And then the checklist is still valuable to them as well, because it's still great prospecting activities they can be doing daily.
Very cool. Yeah, these are some perfect examples. I think, we get a good, strong framework here around the Trojan horse. Tell us about your next strategy.
Yeah. So then this one is pretty easy. You just need an awesome content strategy to pull it off. And this one is building communities. And so again, this is when we can't come up with some kind of utility calculator checklist or something like that, which usually we can. But if we can't, we'll just go straight to building a community. Because again, even for the people who are listening out here, it's really obvious the difference between a cold outbound message of saying, hey, I have this product that's going to save you X times per month, and it helped them get an ROI of this. Are you interested? What's the better message, that, or, hey, I've built a community of people who are all plastic surgeons just like you. Would you like to join this group of plastic surgeons? Like, which message is just going to resonate better, right? And so then we'll get them into this community. There's just, when you're doing a community, there's a lot of things to do it right. And that's what I really wanted to focus on, is like anybody could just put together a Facebook group and start putting people into the Facebook group. But there's things to onboard people, there's things to be doing while they're there, and there's ways to be pitching your offers that all kind of maximize that community space. And so the first thing I always tell people is you need to pick where your community is going to be living. I am very biased towards some people call them dark social. I was going to try to not call them dark social, but there's no better word for it right now. And what I mean by dark social is there's like a social platform that a lot of people are on, and there is some kind of private community living within that platform. So easy example is like a Facebook group. Everybody is on Facebook group, but there's a private, or no, everyone's on Facebook, but there's a private Facebook group off to the side. Same thing with LinkedIn. There's LinkedIn groups, but I don't even list those in my communities usually, because LinkedIn groups have a really tough engagement factor, and the spamming in them is just too much because of like spammers know exactly how to take advantage of those. So I'm very biased towards Facebook, Discord, and Slack to build communities. Something like Circle, and people ask me that all the time. They're saying, well, we'll be able to white label it, and we own all the data, and we do this and we do that. And I'm like, yeah. But now somebody has to take out their phone and they're scrolling on TikTok, they're scrolling on Instagram. Hopefully they're on Facebook, but I've seen Facebook groups are bringing people onto Facebook more than just Facebook anyway. They're scrolling through their regular day outside of being a leader in their business. And now you're asking them to open Circle, you're asking them to open up one of these other apps. So I'm very partial to using platforms that they're already on, and mm-hmm. they kind of have that blend of like casual life, and then work is also on there. So Discord, Slack, and Facebook fit into all of those really well. And so then the way you pick them is, I found there's really obvious things to do. So like service-based businesses go straight into a Facebook group. Like there's not even a discussion. We're just immediate, like the plastic surgeon example, you're going straight into a Facebook group. That's just the way we go. I do a little bit of cryptocurrency shilling, 100% into Discord. Like that's, again, not even a discussion. And then if you're trying to make like a B2B buyers group, again, not even a discussion. Everybody's going into Slack, super easy on those things. So it kind of all depends on the community that you're trying to build, and all of them come with their pros and cons. Discord is probably the hardest to use and makes the least amount of sense to people. So unless you're doing like a cryptocurrency, NFT, metaverse kind of thing, I wouldn't even touch Discord, because even then, crypto companies that have a Facebook group have no credibility. Like you have to have a Discord group. So I usually put that one out to the side only for those things. And then for Facebook, I'm seeing something like a cold email Facebook group is doing way better on Facebook than it is for Slack. So the buckets that I kind of think of when I'm building these communities is like, if you're teaching somebody something that's going to advance in their business every day, I would bring it to Facebook. Like you're teaching them cool little tips, techniques, tricks, those kinds of things. I would put that into Facebook. If you're building kind of like a support group where people can go and they have a question that needs to get answered really quickly because they're trying to put their sitemap together for their SEO and submit it to Google, I would put that into Slack. So it all depends on your content strategy, which then I'm going to get into right now too, because I see a lot of people putting together these Facebook groups, and then the Facebook groups just get ruined because now you have all these people spamming them. You have all these people posting garbage content in there. I tell everybody, if you're going to be building a community, yes, it's easier on the front end than building one of those no-code utilities or those checklists. But for the forever investment, your content strategy within your community needs to be stronger than your content strategy outside of the community. And so I'm not talking about quantity. Talk about quality. Like you need to be really putting up, even if you're only posting once or twice a week, you need to be putting up to bat your best stuff, because that's what's going to get people to keep coming to the community. I just posted in one of our communities how to skirt LinkedIn's connection limit. So LinkedIn allows you to only connect with 100 people per week, but there's this thing, if you know their personal emails, or if you use data tools to get the personal emails, and then you connect through email, I think it's 1,000 per week, but I would never touch that if anybody is out there trying to look this up. Just only do like 500. Anyway, drop that into the community. That crushed it. Somebody tried a post on the team that was just about like the best types of posts on LinkedIn, and it just didn't come the same way. So you really got to up the ante when it comes to your quality.
Something super tactical, like people can go away and do it right now and see an impact.
And then something I tell people all the time is like, even if you don't have a super impactful post, if you just make a video, getting it transcribed and put it in a PDF, I don't know why people love PDFs. There's some difference between like you making a video and you making a PDF that people just love. So that's the other thing that I always go to. If you really don't know what to do, just film a video, get it transcribed, space it out correctly, and just drop it as a PDF. And that's good enough for now. And so the content strategy needs to be extremely strong if you're going to be doing these communities. And then you need to take a very, very disciplined Gary Vaynerchuk approach. And what I mean by that is his book, Jab, Jab, Punch, where you have to be giving value constantly, because you're also building yourself in this like level of authority in a community that you own the distribution. You're in charge of it. Use that to build your level of authority. Don't use it to constantly be doing your offers. There's one Facebook group that I'm in that they only do like a Friday digital marketing masterclass. That's the only kind of content they do. And then for the rest of the week, they're just posting client testimonials. I'm like, well, I don't even know what you guys do, or like how you'd be like, do you guys know something I don't? Because I haven't seen that yet. And so you really want to be doing that jab, jab, punch approach, where then it's value, value, value. And then, hey, I've got 10 spots where we're getting people onboarded into our new tool, you know, for some kind of offer, make it a little nice. Who wants in? And then that's where you're going to get a ton of people who are like, me. But you need to do a lot of work up front to get people into that. But that's another one of my favorite ways, because then there's like, you almost get two shots. And this is the last thing I wanted to say about communities. You almost get two shots at people. You get like one when they join the community, and then two just ongoing. And me and my friends even sometimes call it shooting fish in a barrel, because it's sometimes just so easy because they're all in this community. And what I mean by two shots is like for a Facebook group and a Slack community. So Slack, it takes a little bit more because you have to make like a landing page in the front end before they access the Slack group. RevGenius does a great job of that. I'm going to shout them out for that. But in a Facebook group, you kind of get this one shot where they could be filling out their information, and you can make it seem like you're getting, like, you're only looking for qualified people. Like, are you the owner of your business? Are you know, how many meetings do you have a week? And like now in the buyer's mind, they're thinking like, wow, this community is really nice. They're asking these things. They must be vetting these people. For that ag tech startup, I was joining Facebook groups, and they were asking questions like, what does CBOT stand for? Which, that's the Chicago Board of Trade, but only farmers would know that. And I was like, oh, that's so genius. So then you could ask these like qualifying questions. And then at the very end, you could say something like, hey, we help people scale their cold email without landing in spam. Are you interested in this? And then they'll say yes. And that's like, that actually, that example is exactly how I came up with this. Like, we need to be using outbound to create inbound, because that was like a perfect straight line of emailing people to get them into the Facebook group, and then them saying, yes, I want to find out about that. And then just going straight into a meeting. And so that's kind of like in a quick bucket of like all of the things that you need to build a community. You need to, you know, pick the platform that you want to be on, make sure that your content strategy is far superior than what you have going on your regular content, jab, jab, punch, and then set yourself up for success, asking them in the beginning and then constantly dropping into the community.
Very cool. Yeah. Super interesting. Great tactics. No questions. All super clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like thinking of all the ways that I can go out and try it.
Oh yeah.
Typing away and
what's
my
so
community.
Much fun is it's like, oh yeah. And it's like these things, and I'm just naming like three buckets. There's just so many more that you could even do. And they just work so much better than just like, by the way, if anyone out there is still sending emails that are three paragraphs long, you got to stop. It's like four sentences max. I really like to keep it to three, and that's it. But anyway, so then the third one that I really like doing is running challenges. And this is another one. Sometimes I look at these things, I'm like, how the heck is this going to work? And it's just because I feel like there's this like crocodile brain that everybody has that you're like, there's no way this is going to work. And then somebody sees a challenge and they're like, oh yeah, idea. Like, I got to get that. And so somebody who's run challenges really, really well, and I want to give kudos to, is the team over at, I don't even know what to call their company, I guess. I guess now it's Jasper. It used to be Jarvis. And then when they bill you, it's called conversion.ai. I don't know. But anyway, they are a GPT-3 copywriting tool, probably the best one that I've ever seen. If you do a free trial, type in something like Alexander Hamilton has a fight about B2B marketing with Thomas Jefferson, and you're going to get an awesome little fight between them. It was too funny. But anyway, they put together an awesome challenge of the artificial intelligence author. And so they were basically saying, hey, with our tool, you could write an entire book in 7 days using Jasper. And if you want to do it by yourself, here's the ebook, which I love. They were even charging people for the ebook. It was like $5 for the ebook. And then getting them into the challenge, it was definitely an upsell, but it came with all these services. You're definitely going to get your book done in 7 days. We're going to help you through it. There's mastermind meetings and all of these things. And so that's awesome example of a challenge where now, and this is something we as salespeople also have a tough time doing. Like we sometimes get into the weeds. Like when you're selling your product or service, you want to be trying to like make it sound so good. You're selling a vacation, right? And so sometimes we get too in the weeds, and instead of selling Maui, we're selling like the plane trip, we're selling the car rental, like we're selling all the ways how they're going to get there instead of selling on the end result. And what these guys did so well was they sold on the end result. You will have a book at the end of these 7 days. And so then that's an awesome outbound message. You could go out to, you know, just leaders on LinkedIn, Facebook, wherever you want to go, and just say, hey, you know, if you've been thinking about writing your book for a little while and you just don't even know where to start, we have this ebook to train you on how to do it, or, you know, we have this full challenge that we're doing as well, whichever you want to do. It's totally up to you. And I've always thought that that's just like a great staple challenge. It's just awesome. And so then the way that we kind of used that was one of the startups wanted to have an event mastermind to kind of kick off their startup. And I was like, oh, okay. And they were like, all right, it's going to be an in-person event in Miami. And it's going to be $1,000 a person. I was like, okay, we don't have an audience. We don't have a mailing list. Nobody knows what this platform does. What are we going to do? And so the startup was based completely around helping people. Instead of making like a video course, it was based around building courses that were task oriented. So it was like action versus just education, right? We're going to teach you all the steps versus just teaching you how to do these things. And of course, the steps came with the how-to as well, but it just was a small twist on this dichotomy. So then I said, okay, so if you want to run this event mastermind, we shouldn't make it a mastermind. It should be a challenge where within 2 days, everybody's going to walk out with the framework of their genius and then also their course that they could use, and they could put it for free up on YouTube, or they could put it onto the platform, whatever you want to do. But we're going to sell people to come to this event on the promise of what the outcome is going to be, not like we're going to talk about the neuroscience behind conversion. We're going to be talking about, you know, how to build your offer. We're going to talk about how to prospect. Like, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to do, the outcome is going to be you will have a course done by the end of this. And so then that's, and that doesn't have to be done in person. Obviously, like I said, the AI author was done remotely. And that's an awesome way. Again, if you're even just thinking in your buyer's perspective, what would you rather get a message about? My product or service accomplishes this, or, hey, we're running this challenge right now. By the end of it, you will have a book done. Which one do you like? Are you interested in this? You know, which one do you think would resonate better with your buyers? And so that is another one of my favorites. Some things that I've learned with challenges is you want to make them, we've noticed, I would say 6 weeks is probably, if it takes like a long time and a process to put something together, I would say 6 weeks is probably the sweet spot as far as length, because then it's achievable. They feel like they can get it done. Something like a 12-week program is a little bit daunting. 2 weeks is, 2 weeks is also pretty good too. I've just found that 6 weeks, you can kind of get them over and over and over again on Zoom meetings, and you can keep educating them and you just spend a lot more time with them. That is mostly for like a service-based business that I said. The AI author is doing it in 7 days though. So if you've got a product that they just need to use, ClickFunnels does the same thing as well. I think theirs is My First Funnel Journey or something like that. And that's a 15-day challenge. So 6 weeks is the really, really good sweet spot for like a service-based offer that you need to kind of like coach them through. But if you've got the product and you just need them to go from like onboarding to power user, then like a really quick 7-day, 15-day challenge is one of the favorite things to do. Another thing I would say is really, really keep your expectations and goals aligned and promise what you can guarantee, but don't overpromise, because a lot of times these people try to come to these challenges and they're like, well, you could accomplish this. And it's like, all right, we just got to be totally clear. Like for the AI author, they front everything with like, look, you're going to have to write for 3 days, like no, 3 hours a day. And it's going to be a lot. And Jasper isn't going to write the whole thing for you. There's like a whole framework that you're going to have to build as well. And they're very upfront with how much is actually going to be needed for it. So be upfront about, you know, the kind of guarantees and how much effort it's going to be to put into it. So, and that's just going to increase your success rate overall for the challenge. And then be really particular with your customers that you're picking too. I just watched a company, I was not involved with this, but I just watched a company do a challenge with a lot of their users that came off of AppSumo. And nothing against AppSumo. AppSumo is a great platform to launch on, get a huge cash injection without giving up any equity into your company. Awesome platform. But just you're getting a lot of people who are buying lifetime deals. They're buying lifetime deals because obviously they don't want to pay for full-fledged enterprise products, which of course is sometimes bringing in a level of clientele that might be difficult to constantly be servicing on. So when you're picking kind of the customers that you want to be bringing into the challenge, I would do a lot of due diligence, or just put a fee up front that you could even refund them if you complete your book in 7 days, you get all of your money back, like whatever it might be. But just do it so that, you know, you're getting high quality people in there where it doesn't turn into this huge project. So they took, because they took their AppSumo customers and did this challenge, and they actually had to call the whole challenge off because it was too ridiculous. Too many people were complaining, something about harassing. The support team was coming up as well. It was just a mess. So that was the other noticing that I just had about 2 weeks ago when running these challenges is really pick your clientele. I would really advise against probably not doing a totally free challenge. Founder University right now is Jason Calacanis, is a 12-week program. And I think it's $700. And if you come to all of their Zoom meetings, they're going to give you the money back. Great offer.
Cool.
Easy. Yeah, it's a great offer. Easy to just outbound on and just say, hey, you know, do you want to be a part of this? Do you want to take a look at it? And then when they get to that sale part, you know, we'll give you all of your money back, because Jason is doing that just to get more people to, you know, present to his angel investment group, right? But he's using outbound to create that inbound as well. Now there's 188 of us in there. It was just last night. There's 188 of us in there, and he's literally going to be picking straight from there of people to invest in. And, you know, it's just a perfect little exercise that I was like, oh, this is exactly what I talk about all the time. So that would be kind of my wrap up on challenges.
Amazing. Yeah. Another great strategy. So interesting. So we've got, three strategies here for how to take your outbound, go out to them outbound with something valuable instead of with something where you're asking them for something right off the bat. We're getting them into these different places. So we're either doing the Trojan horse where we're giving them some value add item or, you know, like the no code, the checklist, all that kind of stuff. We're giving them something with the Trojan horse. They're going like, wow, cool. That starts the conversation. We get them inbound there. We've got our communities that we're building that are super specific to the type of customer that we're dealing with. We're vetting those people when they come in so that it's high quality. And we're, again, blasting them with like brilliant tactical content so that they're, again, raising their hands and saying like, these people know what they're talking about. I want to have that next conversation. And then finally, we're dealing with our challenges where we're, potentially doing something paid that ends up being free. But again, vetting people, making sure that those really high quality people come in, giving them a ton of value. And then again, kind of cherry picking from there for our inbounds. Super interesting. Thank you so much for walking us through those three strategies. They're awesome.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Then the last little bonus I'd leave everyone with too, you could get this off the ground today, would be running a LinkedIn event. A lot of people are not taking advantage of LinkedIn events, which I just think is crazy. And I guess it's because they haven't seen the UI behind the LinkedIn event. When you have a LinkedIn event, if you're going to that LinkedIn event, you can invite up to 1,000 people per week who are in your network. And that I've just seen crazy click-through rates. Like I put together an event literally in 20 minutes. There was no copy on the page. I think we named it the results paradigm or something like that. Like it wasn't even a good name. There was no pictures or anything. I invited 1,000 people. The analytics said 342 people came to the page and 156 opted in and said that they would attend the event. And this is just like one of my favorite ways to be using LinkedIn. And a lot of people say like, well, okay, like how many people attended the event? And I say, well, it actually really doesn't matter. I don't care if anybody comes to the event. All that I care about is we just got somebody to raise their hand and say, whatever that is, I'm interested in it. So the results paradigm is a pretty bad name, but we were running one. We called it, I think it was automated cold outbound masterclass or something like that. And we got, 812 people to register for that one. And we just used just one of our webinars to just put it on there. So people just saw something. But from there, we were just picking off the list. And because I didn't care if anybody came to the event, all I cared about is, oh, you're interested in automated outbound? Okay, we're going to talk. And so that I would just leave as kind of like the last bonus one too. You could spin that up today. Get a LinkedIn event, make it kind of a clickbaity name, and just start sending the invites straight on the LinkedIn platform. For some reason, they have a phenomenal click rate. And you know, now you're getting people raising their hand. And because it's LinkedIn, all the data is there. Whatever is your favorite data provider, start collecting their LinkedIn profiles, their email addresses, sometimes their phone numbers if you want. And you could just start throwing them into campaigns as well.
Awesome. Another great tip. If people want to learn more from you, if they want to get in touch with you, Eric, where can they do that?
Yeah, so you can find me on LinkedIn. My name is pretty unique, so it'll just get you right there. So Eric Nowoslawski, Nowoslawski. Or you can email me at eric@blitzhacking.com. Whichever one, I'm completely open.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining us on the show. This was great. There's so many tactical takeaways. I'm sure people are going to get a ton of value out of this. And those of you guys listening, I'd love to hear if you try something like this and you get some results. I'm sure Eric would love to hear that too.
Yeah.
So if you're watching on YouTube, throw a comment. If you're listening, wherever you listen to podcasts, shoot me a note on LinkedIn. And if you are thinking about watching on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button so that you can be notified each week when we have wonderful guests like Eric join us and share great tips. So yeah, thank you to Eric. Thank you to all of you guys, and we'll catch you again next week.
Thank you, Sarah, and the Predictable Revenue team.